Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today, I have back Phil Hack. Phil works at GitHub, making it better for Windows and .NET developers. He's also one of the brightest people you're likely to meet and a really nice guy. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. You have been on before. We talked about the unusual and amazing structure at GitHub. Today, I'm hoping we can talk about Git and GitHub from a developer viewpoint.
Sounds good.
I have GitHub for Windows. I use probably 10% of its potential. And some of that is because I'm scared. And some of it is because sometimes I do something and it says, well, now you have to go to the shell, which I read as, well, now you're doomed. And so what I'm hoping is we could talk through the workflow that you recommend for folks to use GitHub for Windows for source control on, let's start with relatively small projects, just a couple people or even an individual.
Sure. Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to say you don't have to be scared of the shell, although I understand the hesitation. And that's one of the areas that we will continue to work on so that people don't have to drop into the shell too much. And but, you know, there's always going to be situations where you might want to, and we're going to try to make that less scary as well. So going to the workflow, the general workflow that I really like to use myself and I often tell people to check out is something we call GitHub Flow. At its simplest core, it's simply create a branch for every, you know, piece of work you're going to do, whether it's like a bug fix or a new feature. Do the work in the branch. And then when you're done, merge it back into master branch. All right. And a common thing people will say is, well, you know, I'm just working by myself. Why do I need branches? Or, you know, oh, I've tried branching before and it's just so painful. And a lot of times, you know, what I tell people is, well, if you've done branching in other version control systems like Subversion, CVS, you know, TFS, yes, it was painful. And that's often why people don't do it, because they don't realize that, you know, Git has made the branching and merging process a lot better. A lot of times, you know, what those other version control systems would do is, like, creating a branch would take a long time, and then merging it was a real pain. Branching is not the important part. It's the ability to merge it back in. It's much like when you have a backup strategy. Creating backups is fine, but the important part is knowing that you can actually restore those backups. And so the key thing about branching is that every time you branch, you're sort of creating, you know, this parallel timeline of changes that's isolated from your main code and isolated from all your other branches. And that's a huge benefit because, you know, unless you live in some kind of magic world where you never have context switches, you know, typically, even when you're the only one working on a project, you know, you're constantly switching context between, oh, I need to fix this bug. Oh, this feature request came in. Let me work on that for a little bit. Oh, another bug report came in that's urgent. I better switch to that. And what you don't want to have to do is have pieces of in-progress work that you have to work around in order to switch context and work on something else. So you're working on this feature and you have it half implemented. Urgent bug report comes in. You'd really like to just say, well, I'm going to, you know, save this work in a branch and then, you know, switch back to a known good state by, you know, switching back to your master branch, which you try to keep, you know, in a known good state, create a new branch and start working on that bug fix.
Yes, that makes sense. And if merging wasn't scary, then that would be a great way to work. It would be very freeing. And you'd know that you could always get back to someplace clean and you could have those different pieces working in parallel.
Yep. And so merging is probably, it's scary to when you get really crazy merge conflicts, but a lot of the times if you're working on different areas of your code, you almost, you know, you rarely run into these really bad conflicts. And a lot of times those conflicts are, you know, the conflicts you do run into, when you actually look at them, you realize they're not so bad, you know. And so, like, what I often do is, you know, when I have a branch done, I will push it up to github.com and, you know, go through the process of review. You know, if I'm working by myself, clearly, you know, that's less of an issue. But even then, I like to submit a pull request so that, you know, if it's an open source project, other people can see what I was doing. there's a nice review process that you can go through on the website, you know, comment, inline comment on the changes, add comments, add your animated GIFs and emoji.
Briefly, what exactly is a pull request and what does it imply?
So a pull request is a request to pull my changes into the master branch or your repository. So it applies to branches and or forks. If you were running an open source project and I didn't have access to, like, I couldn't commit directly to your repository, on GitHub I could create a fork and then I could do my changes in my copy of, a fork is basically a copy of your repository. I could do my changes in my copy of your repository. And then I could submit a pull request and you can do it right through the UI. And the pull request will notify you that, you know, Phil wants you to take the, you know, pull these changes into your, you know, definitive copy of the source. And then, there's a whole UI around it where we can then iterate on and comment on it and discuss, like, oh, you know, what changes need to be made before you'll accept the pull request. But you can, or if it's perfect, you could just click the merge button and accept it right away, and then now it's part of your code. And pull requests are pretty cool because it's a great way to sort of focus a discussion around an item. So unlike an issue where someone might say, oh, you know, it'd be really cool if we did this, and you can kind of have this discussion, which are great, but when you send a pull request, now you have concrete working code that you can, you know, hone the discussion around. And a lot of people I know, like at GitHub, are into even creating a pull request around the first commit. So a pull request isn't necessarily, hey, this is done, now you accept it, but it could be, hey, this is in progress, here's what I've done so far. And as you continue to push commits to that branch, they'll show up within that pull request. And then, you know, it's a nice starting point to have this discussion. So, you know, in short, like a pull request is really a discussion around code that I want you to take into your copy of the code.
Got it. So in the model you're describing, I create a branch and then I push that branch up to GitHub without merging it.
Correct.
Submit a pull request and at some point down the road, merge it on GitHub.
Yep. Yeah, so when you push the branch to github.com, you'll actually see, and then you go visit the website, you'll actually see that on the homepage of your repository, you'll see a button that says, hey, we noticed you just pushed this branch. Do you want to create a pull request from it? And so when you click that button to do that, you can enter some details about what's in this branch that you want me to take, and then you create the pull request, and now we can start that discussion around it. And then when I'm ready to take it, I can either do it through the command line or I can just go to the site and just click the merge button when I'm ready to accept it.
But you can also merge through GitHub for Windows.
Correct. I could do that too.
And I noticed that it's a very slick interface that you can say, if you have a number of branches, you can say, take this branch and merge it into this other branch to create this third thing.
Right. Or, well, it's really, so you can choose which branch is on sort of like the left and the right, right? So the left branch mm-hmm. is the branch that contains the changes you want, and the right branch is the one you want to merge those changes into. And the end result is it adds a new commit to the right branch, which is the merge commit that says, oh, this is the combination of the changes, you know, from the other branch, and this current branch. So you still end up with that same current branch, but now it contains all the changes from the left branch.
Okay, so none of that is scary, I'm happy to say, and I've been happily making branches and merging, but my merges are very simple, and yep. I don't run into conflicts. What happens when you do run into conflicts?
So when you run into conflicts, this is where things get a little bit more complicated, because the GitHub for Windows, for example, doesn't yet have an interface for helping you go through the process of resolving the conflict. So it will tell you, you know, please open a shell. But it turns out that, you know, when you open the shell, it's a little scary at first, but you get, you know, it's just because it's unfamiliar, right? And once you understand it, you realize it's not that complicated. Some people like to use, you know, complex three-way merge tools when they resolve conflicts, but I actually really like just using the command line and something like Notepad or even Visual Studio. And usually what happens is you run into a conflict, and if you do git status in the shell, it will show you a list of files at the bottom And if you're using PostgreSQL, which we include with PowerShell, you'll see them in red, and we'll say, oh, these are the files that are in conflict. And so what that means is that there are some changes that it couldn't resolve automatically, so it needs you to do it. So if you open that each of those files in turn in Notepad, there will be conflict markers in there, like a bunch of less thans and a bunch of equal signs to delimit sort of like what was in one file, what was in the other. And a lot of the times, all you need to do is like look at that and figure out, well, what do I want the end result to be? Sometimes it's just, you know, removing a section from one, sometimes it's removing a section from the other, and sometimes it's, you know, like combining those two in some way. But when you just think about it as, rather than thinking about it as, oh, I need to choose, you know, what was my change and their change, you think about it in terms of, okay, here's what these two different branches try to change, what do I want the end result to be, and you make those changes, then it's not too difficult. It gets difficult if you and the other person were going in completely different directions, but then that would be difficult in any system, and that is usually a communication breakdown between you and the other developer.
So once you resolve the merge and you've got it the way you want it to be, then what do you do?
Then you type git add each the file name to specify that file has been resolved. Or if you've resolved them all, you can also just type git add dash capital A, and that's going to add all those files and mark them as resolved and add them to your index. And then you type git commit, and then type, you know, and to bring up your note, you know, commit dialog, and that will allow you to type in, you know, the commit message, and then you're pretty much done.
Okay, so there is a book on Git, on understanding Git, or I don't know what the name of the book is, that is hundreds of pages. Is that something I need to read? I mean, you're talking with you, it feels very simple, and there's just a couple commands I need.
So the book is, so here's the thing about Git is it supports just about any workflow you could imagine, which is why, like, you know, it's both very powerful and often very confusing to someone who's new to it. I don't think you necessarily have to read such a book if you're using GitHub for Windows, although, you know, I tend to recommend it because I find it useful. I think where, at the very least, like the chapters on merging might be helpful because, you know, that's the part that's still very relevant when you're using GitHub for Windows. Like, there are more advanced techniques you can start doing if you really get the hang of Git. For example, like, you know, people will talk about interactive rebase and that sort of thing. But I think for someone who's kind of just starting out, GitHub for Windows kind of is a good starting point. It helps you do the workflow. Just create branches, do your work. And then when you need a merge, if you run into conflicts, that would be the only time I'd say, well, yeah, you know, either read an article. We have a pretty good help document on github.com, or, you know, you can read the chapter on merging in that book. But I would say that's about it.
And is there a particular book you particularly like?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of partial to Scott Chacon's book, The Pro Git. He's mm-hmm. a coworker, but that's not the, you know, reason I chose that book. The other thing I'm a real big fan of is there's a website called thinklikeagit.com. But it's a website that sort of talks about, in a visual graph form, what the underlying structure of Git is and why and how, like, you know, certain things like merging and rebase work. And I find it that, like, it may not everyone necessarily needs to understand that, but when you do, a lot of stuff really makes sense and helps you reason about the things you're doing. Like, for example, you know, creating branches in Git is extremely fast. And when you understand the structure of Git, you realize that all creating a branch does is create a pointer to your current node, you know, the current tip of your repository. That's all it does. It's like writing one line in a file and boom, you have a new branch. It's not till your branch deviates that, you know, changes start to happen, right? So, you know, stuff like that is very useful to understand. And so Think Like a Git is really helpful. And
Think Like a Git, by the way, is by Sam Livingston Gray. And
yes.
It's thinklikeagit.net.
Yes, thinklikeagit.net. So I highly recommend reading that. The Pro Git book is a really good one. And then there's also The Parable of Git by Tom Preston Werner, also a GitHub employee, that kind of shows you how it's almost a story of like these two people who are just trying to build their own source control system using, you know, folders and solving problems that they keep encountering. And at the very end, you realize that they've just built Git. And so kind of for those who are kind of interested in why, you know, the design philosophy behind Git, I think that's also an interesting thing to read.
Okay, that's all very helpful, and we'll try to put links to all of that on the show notes.
Cool.
So if I'm using Git for Windows and I know the things you just told me, am I all set, or is there more perspective or more ideas that I should begin to tackle?
Well, you know, honestly, I think at that point you can be productive and get a lot of work done and work with teams. As you get more advanced, I start to get into rebasing, which is something that I'm into. And the concept of rebase is sort of, there's two different aspects of it. The one I'm talking about is, let's say you create this branch, and you've been doing all this work in the branch. It's kind of nice to just get into the flow and just do a bunch of work. But at some point, you get to the point where you're like, wow, I'm about to create this one giant commit, and but with a lot of unrelated stuff to it. And so you might want to say, well, I should break this up into a series of commits. Or I should, take some of these changes and put them into a previous commit. And that's where you start to learn things like git rebase-i, which is a way of allowing you to sort of craft your history of commit. Now, in general, it's bad form to change the history of anything that you've shared with others and published. So, what I'm talking about right now is just changing the commits that are still on your machine that you haven't yet pushed up to GitHub. And, I think that's sort of like the next level of, Git mastery. But it's not absolutely necessary. So, some people think it's a little bit OCD or a little bit anal. But there's a small benefit to having each commit be sort of cohesive and understandable. Well, there's two benefits I can think of. One is it makes it really easy for people who are reviewing your code to sort of see how you progressively made that and not to have all this extra noise in there. For example, if you did all these commits and you're like, I didn't like this commit, I'm going to go a different path. You might want to squash those commits into one commit that's logical. But the other benefit is also this tool called Git Bisect. And I think Git Bisect is one of those really powerful tools that not a lot of people who use Git necessarily use, at least on Windows. And what Git Bisect does is it's basically a binary search through your commit history for like a bug. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're working on someone reports a bug and you're looking into it and it's not clear where that bug is in your code base, but you know that, well, this bug is fairly recent, but I'm not really sure which commit it was introduced in. So you can drop into the shell and you can say, well, I want to do a Git bisect. And I know that this commit way back here was good, like let's say the last one we shipped. And I know the current commit is bad. And then what Git bisect will do is it will start, doing a binary search where it'll jump to, let's say, the halfway commit between those two commits and then take, revert your working directory into that state. And then you can run your unit tests or run, this code, or try the app out. And you'll just basically say Git bisect good or Git bisect bad, right? So mm-hmm. good if that bug isn't there, bad if the bug is there. And then eventually, in a few hops, depending on how many commits there are, you'll be able to nail down which commit it was that introduced this bug just by doing the binary search. And once you have that, that's a really helpful information for figuring out, what's the root cause of this bug, which commit, what change made this bug. And so if you have this nice, clean history where each commit, for example, builds and runs all your tests, then going through the process of Git bisect is actually very handy. And it's the kind of tool that, a lot of, again, like a lot of people are like, oh, I don't really need that. If a bug comes in, I'll just, brute force find the, cause of the bug. But when you have a clean history and you can use this tool, you'll find that a lot of times it makes figuring out the cause of a bug way faster. I mean, just to know the specific commit that caused it is really, really helpful.
Yeah, that sounds tremendously useful.
Yeah. Yeah, and my hope is to even... So you can actually pass a shell script to it as well that then it will run that script and then tell you whether the script, and the script just has to return like, you know, pass or fail or something like that. And so you could actually automate the entire git bisect thing. The tricky part is doing that on Windows with like running your unit test or this or that is very tricky. And so that's like one of those things that eventually I'd love to help automate. Yeah, you could imagine, like, for example, I could paste in a unit test that I wrote, and then or a piece of test code, and then have the script run that test code on every iteration of the git bisect. And then, you know, in like a few seconds, it'll report back, oh, this commit fails this test.
Okay, so that's GitHub for Windows, and that's working locally. But there's this very powerful site, github.com. Tell me a little bit about what I should know about that.
Cool. So, couple things. One is, you know, clearly our GitHub for Windows client, you know, is well geared towards working with GitHub.com, the website, right? So I talked about pull requests, and pull requests is sort of the, in my mind, they're sort of the heart of collaborating on GitHub.com. You know, a big goal of ours is to make it, you know, better for people to work together than to work alone, and pull requests is a big factor in that. But there's a lot of other cool features of GitHub.com that I feel like people should be aware of. For example, if you are an open source developer and you have this repository and you want a nice, you know, beautiful looking landing page for the site rather than just pointing people to your repository, for example, for end users, right? So like developers who want to contribute to your project, you might point them to your repository URL. But for people who want to learn about your site or want to read your docs, you can use something called GitHub Pages. And if you go to settings of your repository, there's even a button now that allows you to create, you know, a pages site for your repository. And there's some default templates that our designers have created that you can choose. And so you can just, you know, quickly generate a site. And powering that under the hood is something called Jekyll, which is a static site generator. And that allows you to use Markdown to write out your pages and then have it generated into HTML. And the cool part of it is that everything that you do in your GitHub Pages site is just a special branch within your main repository named gh-pages. And so that's all versioned just like you would do, you know, with your source code. And you get this free, you know, nice-looking website, you know, as a result. So it's, you know, one cool thing I recommend people check out. The other thing is, you know, and often goes hand in hand with that, is that we've added in the recent few months, we've added a lot of ability to edit your files within your repository directly through the website. So this is really great. Like if you, you know, just need to tweak your README file, if you need to update your docs or GitHub Pages, you know, or, you know, if you really want to, you know, tweak a line of code, you know, that you're sure that it's going to be okay, you can do it all through the website. You can even create branches through the website. You can delete files, add files through the website. So the website is becoming a real powerful way for collaborating for people who don't necessarily want to understand Git, right? Like, so if you're working on a documentation project, it'd be great to do it through Git and through GitHub's web interface and work with writers who, you know, frankly don't want to learn how to use a command line or how to use Git. So that's something I'm pretty excited about as well.